It's Bill Bennett's Morning in America.
Good morning. It is Seth Leibson, joined by Catherine Lopez from National Review Online and a nationally syndicated columnist. It is Monday, March 8th, 2010. We are sitting in for Bill Bennett on Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Glad you are here to join us. An amazing thing happened in Iraq this past weekend, something they said could not be done, and that is the emergence of a democratic state in the Arab Middle East. And joining us to talk about what happened this weekend is Michael Rubin, the resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, one of the greatest experts on Iraq that I know, and that has been a good friend to this show, as well as to our troops. He instructs them all the time. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Seth.
How are you, sir?
Pretty good.
Tell us what you saw this weekend.
Well, this weekend I saw a solidifying of a pattern which has surprised a lot of people. We saw Iraqis go to another election. This time, insurgents tried to disrupt it with some bombing and some mortaring in Baghdad. But still, perhaps 60% of the Iraqis turned out to vote, which is significant. And if I could just step back and look at the forest through the trees,
yes,
how refreshing is it to go to an election in an Arab state or anywhere in the Middle East where we simply don't know the outcome, nor do the Iraqis. It really is a symbol that things are starting to change, in Iraq at least.
It's a good point. This is not a foreordained election where the victor won by 99.9%.
Indeed, and even if Prime Minister Maliki wins, the incumbent,
yeah,
a lot of people are saying he may not have the votes to form the coalition, because at most he's only going to get about one-third of the vote. He may get the plurality but not become prime minister. And one thing which is extremely refreshing in Iraq is just the idea that if an incumbent is corrupt or doesn't perform well, he can be replaced.
Yeah, this sounds an awful lot like another democracy in the Middle East where they have to form coalitions, Israel, actually.
Well, indeed. Israel is, yeah, the only other state,
right,
in the Middle East where people don't know who the next ruler will be.
That's right.
Michael, I too was struck by the turnout numbers. What is motivating these people? Is it an actual confidence in the government? Is it an anger at these people who are trying to circumvent progress? What seems to be happening there?
It's a little bit of both. As you know, I was in Iraq back in December and January, and I traveled around, not the Kurdish area where most people normally go, but I went actually down to Najaf, to Basra, and to the Shia areas. And there is a combination of anger and excitement. If you go to Baghdad, despite the billions of dollars that have been poured into the city, one thing that will strike any visitor is that there's no cranes on any of the buildings. There's not new construction projects. And yet, the people see the residences of the establishment politicians, which are quite palatial. They see the U.S. Embassy, which has electricity where no one else does, and when no one else does. And that creates a lot of anger towards the corruption and so forth, which is occurring in society. At the same time, when you go further south, you do see a lot of development, and that spurs a lot of people to think with their pocketbooks. The big difference between this election and past elections is actually in the details. This election used something called an open list, where the previous elections used something called a closed list. And what the difference there is that people can vote for individuals instead of just party lists. And this has created also an excitement about being able to throw out some of the coat hangers, the people hanging on to the coattails and others of the power brokers who are seen as corrupt. It gives an opportunity for the upshots really to break into the political system. I have one DAWA member, and DAWA is the party of the prime minister now, saying he only expected 50% of the parliament to be returned, which is also quite amazing in the Middle East.
Michael, thank you. Yes, I agree with you. That is amazing. Two tough questions about this that is of concern to a lot of Americans and others. You look at the two leaders, the possible next prime ministers, Ayad Alawi and Nouri al-Maliki. Closeness to Iran, there's been some talk about that, correct?
Correct.
How do you assess both parties and both candidates in their ties to Iran?
Well, almost every politician in Iraq has close ties to Iran. That's because with the Americans telegraphing that they're going to withdraw according to this timeline, all the politicians, even the so-called secularists, are trying to make accommodation. Now, Ayad Alawi, who was prime minister back in 2004 and 2005, has a reputation for being much more secular, much more liberal, even though he is a Shia. And he doesn't have as close ties towards Iran.
Can I pause you right there? This is what's interesting to me and quite amazing on its face. He is a Shiite Muslim, Ayat Alawi, and yet his list, if I read it right, his party, if I read it right, is basically appealing to the Sunnis. Is that correct?
That is correct. He was partnering initially with Saleh Mutlaq, who was alleged to have ties to the Sunni insurgency and who was one of the candidates that was disqualified in this commission run by Ahmad Chalabi and Alami.
Mm-hmm.
But Ayad Alawi, while he doesn't have as close ties towards Iran, is also a little bit problematic because he does have disturbingly close ties to Syria, which, as we know from all the confiscated documents, has been the linchpin of supporting the foreign fighters.
Right. And now Maliki is a little bit closer to Iran, we fear he may go that way.
Correct? That is correct. Okay. Maliki is much more close to Iran, but even the Kurdish politicians like Masoud Barzani and the president of Iraq, Jalal Talabani, have become increasingly close. Remember that when we intercepted the Iranian special groups that were shipping explosively formed projectiles into Iraq and other weaponry, we intercepted them in the Kurdish area where they were not, where they were the guests of the Kurdish government, not there without their knowledge.
Right, right. Okay, I gotcha. Now, we won't know results. Papers are saying a few days. It actually could be longer than that, isn't it? Couldn't it?
Indeed. You're already getting people talking about fraud, and whether fraud occurred or not, it doesn't matter. Whoever feels that they're on the losing side of things is going to scream fraud, and that will take some time to resolve. But remember, some of the preliminary results suggest that Prime Minister Maliki will get the most votes, but he's only going to get about 33% throughout the country, which means there's going to be at least 4 or 5 months of really heavy coalition negotiations. And in this case, it may be heavier and more problematic than before, because the Kurds, who are fearful that as the Americans withdraw, they're going to lose a lot of their strength. They're going to lose, the reality of American backing. Many people feel that the Kurds are going to hold out for broke on issues such as Kirkuk and oil and other issues which have yet to be resolved 6 years after we've gone into Iraq.
Michael, speaking of winning, we only have about a minute left, but what did you think of that Newsweek cover, Victory at Last, with George Bush on the aircraft carrier last week?
Well, I think there's something to it. And look, Iraq, it's not trendy to talk about Iraq now that George Bush has left, and it's not trendy to bash Iraq because George Bush has left, but we really have a situation that when this government is over, and we now see, I think Samuel Huntington had defined democracy as the successful transfer of power from government to opposition
right,
two or three times,
right,
we now see a situation where the Iraqis who are going to be entering the university are going to be those that have no political memory of Saddam Hussein. He will have been gone 10 years. And that in itself is extremely significant. I make an allusion to Korea when it came to Harry S. Truman. He was bashed and bashed and bashed for getting the United States mired down in Korea. But now when we juxtapose North Korea and South Korea, boy, aren't we glad he made that calculation and did it.
Michael, one other uncomfortable question, if I might. We had a few callers on this last week, and I promised we'd ask you about them. They were worried about Christian persecution in Iraq.
That is a very real issue, especially up in Mosul, where the tomb of Jonah, of biblical Jonah, is. That's both partly religiously motivated and partly because the Christians don't have the tribal protection that many of the Muslims do, and so people just feel that they're easy pickings.
Do you see any possibility that this will stop under a new government?
Unfortunately, it ebbs and flows.
Okay.
I think it will get a little bit better, but they simply don't have the representation. This is why U.S. diplomatic pressure and Western diplomatic pressure remain key.
Good to know. Michael, will you stay close with us and maybe rejoin us again this week as news develops?
Sure.
Michael Rubin of the American Enterprise Institute.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks a lot for joining us on Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Stay tuned, folks.